recordings from Blog Talk Radio. The sound file seemed to work today. It is Wednesday, June 10th. This is Mike Vandervoort, fresh off a long weekend in the Colorado Rockies, where there were still like 8 feet of snow on the ground high up, which was very cool, up there in shorts and a golf shirt, looking at 8 feet of snow while it was 60 degrees outside. So very extreme terrain, and had a great time and glad to be back. Our guest today is a first-time guest on Drive Through, Mary Wright, who's an attorney. Mary, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you so much. I think this is the first time I've ever actually had walk-up music. You know, as I
there you go. And really, we don't allow it customized just yet, but maybe one day we'll be able to have people provide their own walk-on on tune. But so anyway, Mary, you're an attorney in the employment law. And introduce yourself to the drive-through listeners and tell us where you're
sure.
at and what you're doing these days.
Sure. I hope nobody holds it against me that I'm an HR lawyer. I'm an employment lawyer, and it's of long standing. I've been practicing law for about, over 25 years, and all I've ever done is employment law. I started when, you could carry all of the information you needed to handle a dispute or a lawsuit in a banker's box, maybe a personnel file, maybe a handbook, a letter or two, a performance evaluation. And now it's like we have war rooms full of emails and electronically stored information and all kinds of things like that. And it's been an interesting evolution over 25 years. HR has changed. The practice of law has changed. Everything like that. I didn't start out to be a lawyer. I started out to be an actress.
Oh, really?
I give you the same one I give everybody else. Now I just act like I know what I'm doing.
Being a lawyer in some cases requires, especially if you do trial law, right, it requires a little bit of performance,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it?
It does.
I was never
actually,
an attorney, and even sometimes being an HR person, especially on the labor side, when you're negotiating and, you have to make people, believe that you believe every word you're saying and all that kind of stuff is kind of it may not be a critical skill on job descriptions, but I think it's important in the greater scheme of things, although certainly
it's extremely,
credibility.
It's extremely important. It's extremely important. And in fact, one of the things about being an actress, and actually I have an undergraduate in acting and a graduate degree in playwriting, and I spend my days telling stories. I mean, I don't mean that as in lying. I mean telling the story of what happened. And communication is the bedrock of what a lawyer does. Can't communicate properly.
You're also a blogger, right?
Yes.
Yeah, where do you blog?
Well, for a long time I had my own blog. I had HR Gazette. It was a small blog, but loved by its followers, I like to think, but no. Actually, I spent most of my blogging time working with Jessica Miller Merrill, and I was, at that time, I was the only lawyer, and now they have Casey Sipes, who's an excellent lawyer as well. And they may have another lawyer or two on the board, but we handled mostly compliance issues. For the blog, all kinds of stuff about how HR can keep themselves out of trouble.
Right. So when you reference employment law, you were with Ogletree last I checked, although that seems to be in somewhat fluid state. So where are you practicing right now, and what's up on that front?
Well, if you look up my picture on LinkedIn, and maybe you're a friend of mine on Facebook, you can see that I am processing into Act 4 of my life. I am cutting back on my hours of practice, and I am refashioning my legal practice. I'm cutting back on my hours, and what I really want to do is I want to focus on the one thing that I feel I can make the greatest impact, and over 25 years I feel like I have made the greatest impact on, and that's advice and counsel. I want to do less of the trial work and more of the advice and counsel. And I like making a relationship with my clients that they can, the old adage of a burden shared is a burden halved, and I really take that to heart, and I think that it's important for lawyers to really listen and understand the story of what's going on in the client's life and try to customize it and craft a solution for it. And that's really where I'm going with my practice. Less trial, more advice and counsel, more proactive work. And also, I just completed my certification to become a mediator, and I'm moving into the arena of mediation, employment law mediation. So that's
great.
Where
now
I'm going.
Now, you live in California, right?
Yes, I
yeah.
do.
Yeah. It's
the
it's,
land
it's,
of crazy it's, HR laws.
Oh, yeah, it's like all, you might as well say you live in Brazil. I mean, not just because the laws sometimes seem as relevant to other states that I'm familiar with anyway. And I'm sorry to all the California listeners, that was just facetious. But it really is a different HR animal and a different legal animal. So you were with Ogletree Deacons, which is like one of the mega law firms, right? Just like the big accounting firms have gone down to the big four. I think major law, I don't know what they call it. I don't know if it's the big nine or whatever, but there's a handful of really big law firms. And you were with Ogletree for a long time.
It is an excellent law firm. It is one of the nation's top labor and employment boutiques. They're voted top in litigation and labor routinely by all of the people who take measurements, U.S. News and World Reports, Hildebrand, you know, just all of the various people who keep metrics all say Ogletree is a great, great firm. I didn't leave it because I didn't like it. I left it because I'm going in a different direction.
And so you're gonna join another firm, or are you gonna be on your own shingle?
I'm joining another firm, but that's not we haven't the ink isn't dry. I have not been completed my bed.
Okay, you don't want to talk about it.
Which one it is?
I'm not trying to be nosy. I'm just curious. So it, but
that's all right.
Okay.
Watch LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Watch LinkedIn.
Yeah.
It's going to be announced there in the next couple of weeks.
Got it. Okay, so there's a teaser.
But in the interim, I'll tell you that I'm taking probably the first completely work-free vacation in 20 years. It's kind of glorious. You know, I don't know whether you experience that phenomenon yourself, but being, you know, working and taking a vacation is very different than not working and taking a vacation. It's a lot of fun.
I did it mostly between job changes, as you are. I've done it a few times. I did it once when I moved to Florida. I did it without another job on the horizon. That was probably my phase two, about 12 years ago. And it because I did it at a time when I had worked my entire life, literally from the time I was 14 till the time I was 47, I didn't really get to enjoy it because I was freaking out about what's next. And it all came together very nicely. And I could have, wish I had that time back. So the first time didn't go so well because I put a lot of pressure on myself that I didn't need to. So,
well, you know, for a couple of years, for I don't remember the exact year count, while I was at Ogletree, I was the firm's general counsel, and we have 750 lawyers, and I think we're up to 1,800 employees, including the lawyers. So even a vacation, as the current GC, the great Chris Nixon, will tell you, it's very difficult to take a vacation when you're a full-time practicing lawyer and you have significant administrative duties for a law firm. It's just very different. Actually, you know, that segues into a great thing that you wanted to ask me about, and that is, you know, what keeps HR up at night? What keeps HR from having a good vacation? I mean, really, it's no different. Everybody has their own stress levels, and, you know, I think vacation is the time to unplug and unwind, and if there was anything I could tell HR today, I would tell them that they need to take that time off, like everybody else. But unfortunately, you can't turn off your brain when you lay down at night sometimes. And you asked me what keeps HR, what keeps my clients up at night. That was one of the questions you wanted to ask me.
One of the first questions we had.
And,
yep. Go ahead. So is that
I think that one of the things that keeps people up at night in my area, the thing that concerns them the most, aside from the standard issues of, you know, worker misclassification and overtime pay or, you know, meal break mistakes, especially in California, that can literally sink a small to mid-sized company. I think one of the big things that keeps HR up at night is how to communicate appropriately policies and procedures to employees or really significantly how to communicate them up in an upward direction to get buy-in, and horribly how to errors or misapplications of policy You know, the HR frequently is the bearer of bad news to boards and executives, and it frequently comes with a big price tag. And I think what keeps HR awake at night is how to fashion and disclose, while being completely truthful, but how to fashion and disclose bad news, not only to people who work above you, but also when you're handling a reduction in force or terminating employment. And I think that how to communicate that in a compassionate, intelligent, and a truthful way is one of the big deals in HR.
Yeah, I was just at a conference last week where I spoke, and you know, we had a panel, and then mm-hmm. you know, so we each gave our little 5 to 7 minutes about our, you know, area of expertise, and it was called Voice of the Employee. And one of the questions that somebody asked was, you know, I work for a company that has had to have several reductions in force, and they always wait till the last minute, right? What can we do mm-hmm. would be better? And, you know, and it was kind of like, you know, my first answer was, well, stop waiting till the last minute. I mean, although that, you know, that may be driven by bad management or just by circumstance. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that could happen legitimately, I guess. But, like, so what, so, you know, you're right. I think communication, companies struggle with it, even though it's something they do all the time. And HR, even though it's supposed to be one of our core competencies, we often struggle with it. So what, do you have I mean, I know you can't talk about clients specifically, but do you have an example that you can think of and that maybe we could, you know, pick some pointers out of, Mary?
I can give you a perfect example, and this is a situation where it's a mid-sized company, and California is going through the sort of body blow of paid sick leave right now. They're instituting a statewide paid sick leave policy that goes into effect July 1st. Every employer, and I'm not going to talk about the eligibility requirements or what makes a covered employer and all of that, suffice it to say that it's really, really difficult to get right the first time. And it can result in wage and hour complications because it has to do with how people get paid. And one of the things that happened recently was they administer benefits for a client administers benefits for a practice group, a healthcare practice group, and they earn time off by, you know, maintaining their utilization or their appointment schedule, and then they can take whatever they want. They have a no vacation policy or a no sick leave policy where you just take the time off and you arrange your schedule how best you can. But the rules require a certain amount of record keeping. And so I was confronted with the idea, well, can't we as adults agree to waive this obligation? I mean, if everybody, if all 38 of these individuals who are covered by the law, can't we just waive it? And unfortunately, you can't do that. And because it, you know, all it takes is one disgruntled employee after the fact to say that we were coerced into waiving our rights. And the DLSC, the Labor Commissioner in the state of California, really frowns on that, as you can imagine. And how to communicate that to the doctors without making them sound like, you know, this is something that is one of those HR obligations that everybody hates, but you have to do it. And how to communicate that in a way that gives them some feeling that they have control over what they do and still make everybody happy and explain it in a way that gets the job done without making everybody feel like they're in third grade. Like, this is what the law is, and this is what we have to do, and this is California. And, you know, you can't make a decision contrary to the law in California. You have to follow the law. So it's very difficult. Those sorts of crafting those sorts of messages back to the employees in partnership with HR is a lot of what I do on a daily basis. Just how do you fashion the message to get consensus to try and keep people happy and engaged in their job?
Okay. I need to do we're about halfway through, so let me do a quick reset. For those of you that may have joined us in process, this is Mike Vandervoort. I'm hosting today's Drive Through. It's June 10th, Wednesday, and our guest today is Mary Wright, a lawyer and some part-time actress. Oh, wait, no, not quite. But no, she's here in, as she self-described, phase 4 of her life, and so we're talking a bit about employment law and some of the things that confront lawyers and HR practitioners, especially in California where Mary lives. And where are you in California? I didn't ask. What city?
Well, I was in San Francisco, but I have recently left my home in San Francisco and journeyed down the peninsula to Menlo Park, and it's so beautiful here. If anybody of your listeners is familiar with Silicon Valley and Menlo Park, it is a sleepy little community outside of the real hubbub of Silicon Valley. It's really lovely.
So you've slowed down from the big city, which San Francisco. You know, I've only been to San Francisco once and have never been in the heart of San Francisco, and I have to fix that. But it's like one of the most expensive cities in the U.S. to live in, if not the most expensive at this point, right?
Well, it may be. I think that maybe some in the state of Hawaii or New York may be slightly different. But living on the peninsula is an extremely expensive proposition.
Yeah.
Anything from where the bridge crosses to Marin all the way down to San Jose is some of the priciest real estate in the universe, on the planet. I don't know about the universe. It is very expensive.
But there's no data available to talk about the price of housing on Mars yet. But it's probably more expensive.
It probably dollar. I think the commute. I think it's what is the expensive part of Mars.
We're neither SpaceX nor are we a NASA podcast, so we'll probably verge back away from. I have no expertise there either. So as you said, Mary, that one of the questions that we talked about, one of the general questions that we typically follow on drive-through is what keeps you or your clients up at night. So you said, you know, communication. Are there any other things? And especially as you move into phase four, do you see things on the horizon that I mean, you said you're, you know, in the mediation, and you know, there's that's like a different. It's not different, but well, it is different. Although it's still in the same, you know, in the same general practice of law. But there's a lot of nuances. So what about in that area? Do you see anything?
Well, you know, human resources, working with human resources and being an employment lawyer that partner with human resources professionals to try and make sure that they maintain compliance with the company and stay out of, you know, away from the weasels, as Heather Bussing would say, of litigation. Is really important. It's a job that involves, you know, a great deal of my intellect in trying to work out and craft solutions for people. But it also, my heart is seriously involved. I love the HR community. I think, you know, if I could say one thing on my soapbox for one thing, I am a little frustrated with the HR lady persona because although I think we can all finally get rid of the Michael Kors bag giveaway, I do believe that there's a great deal of intellect and a great deal of desire to do the right thing in the HR community. I don't know any of them that don't hate to fire people. I don't know any of them that don't want to stay compliant. And I don't know any of them that they're either up on HR technology or they know who to call within the organization to crunch all the data and help them interpret it. So, my big soapbox is I'd like to sort of give the HR lady a little break. And I work with so many of them that are really vital and intelligent people, and especially in California where it is a real hard job. And it requires a great deal of training and thought to be a good HR person in California. It does everywhere. I don't mean to say that it's something special, but in California, as you mentioned, the land of the crazy employment laws, it's very difficult to maintain compliance and to maintain buy-in and engagement of employees at the same time. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, do we need the HR handbook? Can we finally farm it out? Can we get rid of it? But it's very difficult in California to do away with the handbook because there are so many things that you're required to tell your employees by law. But, you know, sort of things for me as far as, you know, what's going on in my mind, I really love my involvement with the HR community, and I'm hoping that by taking this job I'll be able to spend more time one-on-one with my HR folks as opposed to saying, oh, I have a court appearance, I need to dash off and do that, I'll call you on the way back from court. Happens a lot. I'm hoping that will happen. I'm really curious about what this next phase of my life is going to look like. I'm looking forward to becoming a mediator, a full-fledged mediator. I'm currently certified, but not acting as a mediator. I like building consensus, and I'm hoping that translates well into the mediation profession. And I worry about my kids. show my kids. I've got a 25-year-old who just started his own business, and I have a younger child who has some special needs. So it's a full life, even at stage four or act four.
Act four, stage four. Yeah, act four sounds better than stage four. Stage four has full stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess. So yeah, and it seems as though I mean you mentioned Heather, and Heather is just an amazing person to me. She's kind of going through, you know, she drifted away or pulled back from trial work, and I know some other folks, you know, whether it's in the HR space or in the legal side, that are kind of doing the same thing. I mean, is this a generational thing, or is everybody just looking for the mythical balance?
You know, it might be a generational thing. It might be a trend, but I will tell you this. I think that there are people who thrive on the stress and pulse of litigation. And when we first started, like I said before, I'm not whether I'm going to be able to articulate this very well, so bear with me and forgive me if I get it wrong the first time. But the idea is that there's two sides to an HR lawyer, somebody that is proactive and keeps people out of court, and then there's someone that comes in and cleans up what a plaintiff, former employee, thinks of as a mistake or a mess. And I find that my strength is in the helping people stay out of court side. And I think Heather has a lot of different strengths. I would never pigeonhole her. She's a great lawyer and a very good friend. But I think that we gravitate towards that because we see so much pain in the courtroom and so much wasted time and money in the courtroom and so many unpleasant people on the other side of the table that it becomes part of a process to recognize that what you'd really rather be doing is dealing with the client and less with the system. And part of that is a generational thing. Part of it is I know there are a lot of male HR lawyers, a lot of male employment lawyers that are very successful in advice and counsel. Very, very. But I think women excel at it. I'm just going to throw that out there. And so that's one of my key points.
Thing? Is it a gender-based difference? I don't mean to imply. I just can't resist asking.
No. I'm staying very much away from the notion that men and women are not are equal in their talents. I think maybe there may be a slight difference in what they desire to do. And I don't know. I know lots of aggressive women, lots of really hard-hitting litigators, lots of them. They're very talented and very successful as trial lawyers. I'm just not one of those people. I'd rather be on the other end of it.
Well, you know, I mean, it's, you know, and we all go through, to your point, phases, acts. That's right. I'm getting the word right here. Mm-hmm. I'll catch up and go. We all go through various acts in our lives. Early in my HR career, I worked on the union side a lot more than I do today. In fact, I don't do any work on the union side now. And you know, we negotiated collective bargaining agreements. It was very competitive and it was very compelling. It was very strategic, and it required a lot of preparation. The process was incredibly demanding, incredibly consuming, and yet it literally ate up weeks, if not months, of your life. And yet at that time, when I was doing it, I loved it. It was like a constant adrenaline rush, right? If I was asked to negotiate a contract today, I would be like, oh no, because I don't have I don't have any desire to chase that cat, if you will. You know, it would be too hard to work myself back up into that phase because I'm doing a whole lot of other stuff that I find much more rewarding. And I think that's essentially what you're saying. Each one of us strives for in our own way, even if it is to chase conflict hard, because some people do thrive on that.
You know, I had a very good professor way back in my acting days tell me that, you know, acting is a calling, and it is something, but it's a very, very harsh calling, and that you face a lot of rejection. I mean, you have to constantly prove yourself through auditions until you become a big star, of course, but you have to constantly go out and audition. And so although it is a calling, and you may feel called to the world of the theater or to the, you know, to cinema or whatever you want to do, if there's something else that keeps you happy and can invigorate you and keep you really, that you find an equal calling, it's a great idea to pursue it because there may be less rejection, maybe less heartache in it. And I think that you can have more than one calling. I think that you should look around. When I first started, man, I was at the height of L.A. law. I was going to go out and be, you know, a big trial lawyer, and I was good at it. I've had a lot of trials and everything, but as my life has progressed, I find that I've got other callings.
Yeah. I loved L.A. Law. Pam, what's her name? Pam Eikenberg.
Jill Eikenberg and...
Green and a few others. They were quintessential lawyers at the time, right? L.A. lawyers. Anyway.
Yeah. Everybody wants to be the female lead, but they end up being, if you get stereotyped into being Rosalind, the one who fell down the elevator shaft.
A lot of drama on that show, a lot of soap opera drama, but it was well worth watching back in the day. Anyway, and for those that missed it, sorry, it was magical, and you'll never capture the magic from the 80s again. I'm gonna segue way out into Robert De Niro. Did you happen to see the graduation speech he gave at the New York? I think it was New York University School for Theater.
No, I just heard. I just heard the tagline of essentially telling a group of newly graduated employees that basically they were up a creek, as we would say on radio.
They were up a creek in the typical De Niro style that he's known for. But his point beyond that, it was a very funny opening line, I suppose, if you weren't a graduate waiting for your first acting opportunity. It was very funny. But his point, actually, of the rest of the speech, which I think is on YouTube, it's worth a watch maybe for you just to, you know, he basically said what you said, find that thing that you love, and, you know, and if you fail the first time, you got to just keep going for the auditions. You got to keep, you know, it's a matter of perseverance because it's not magic. Yeah, you know, you're gonna, and you have to stick with your passion. It was good. I mean, it was a graduation speech, but it was pretty good, and it had an F-bomb in it. So how bad could it be, right?
That's right.
So we're down to 3 minutes, and I've only asked you one question. So see, I told you this was easy and goes fast. We kind of covered a little bit of what's up next for you because you've got your shadowy secret announcement that we've teased, and you'll have to watch your LinkedIn page. In the next 2 minutes, tell us what's top of mind for you right now, and you mentioned LinkedIn, but you also have a Twitter account, and then close with telling people where they can find you on the interwebs, all right?
Okay. Well, what's top of mind for me? This job change, relaxing, making a life change about trying to eliminate a lot of the stress in my life. I don't think it ever goes away, and I think that people mistake urgency and intensity for stress. And you have to have urgency and you have to have intensity to practice law, regardless of what area you're in. But I'm trying to do away with a lot of the worry that goes along with it, and trying to take sort of back my life from the practice of law. It was very demanding. And so that's sort of top of mind. And, you know, reconnecting with my kids after being a lawyer for 25 years, not an easy task either. But, you know, where they can reach me, you can always find me on LinkedIn, Mary Wright, mediator, trial attorney, advice and counsel. You'll find me there. And also you can find me on Twitter for Lawyer for Employer, and that's a number 4, Lawyer for Employer. And then you can also find me occasionally now on Blogging for Jobs. That's Jessica's blog that we mentioned earlier.
Okay. Yeah, and I write there very occasionally, although my pace is going to pick back up because I've got to do better. So anyway, I think I have a post tomorrow. Listen, it was great having
you on. I will be creating a additional web presence for my new law firm, which includes blogging on compliance and legal issues and human resources issues for the firm, which is something I really like doing. I like doing the practical side of it, how-to stuff, which is going to be fun. But that's where
I am. Great. Awesome. Well, we're down to the last 10 seconds, Mary, so let me just say thank you very much for being a guest. When you get
it's
your media, you know, when you get a year of your mediation practice under your belt, let's get you back on and talk about that, because that's something we don't touch on much here, but it fits into the HR space.
I would love to.
Great. Thanks for being on Drive.
Thank you so much.
Roll out with some music here. Have a great afternoon.
Same to you.